my name's John, I'm an addict. Addict, alcoholic, poor penmanship, a lot of other things, but I didn't come here to do a fifth step tonight, but I am grateful. And by the way, if I'm talking too loud, this thing feels really hot. If anybody's getting blown out, let me know. I am grateful to be asked to be here tonight. Been attending the spaghetti dinner for years, attended the Sunday night strength meeting for years, an amazing event. So grateful to be invited to be here. I also want to say that I said a prayer before coming up here that the words would come, that they would be God's words, what was meant to say. If you hear anything that sounds stupid, that's probably me. That's probably the guy standing up here, okay? Amen. But the good Lord has delivered me from the obsession to use, and that is the miracle. And I give the credit to him, and I couldn't see it back in the day. Apparently I'm too far from the microphone, so I can step up a little, make sure everybody can hear. Okay, thank you. In my mind, the good Lord did deliver me, and the obsession has been lifted by working these 12 steps in this book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the basic text for our fellowship and a number of others. And I am grateful for everyone who has taught me how to work that program here. It says in our book that if you read the foreword, in the beginning, the very first foreword back in 1939 to this book, we, the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, now numbering over 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And goes on to talk about, how they want to share their experience, strength, and hope, and exactly how they did it. And they say recovered, and it's not that they're no longer alcoholics, not that we are no longer addicts. It is that we have been delivered from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body by working these 12 steps, by working this program. And I'm so grateful that it was shared with me freely, and I want to share that with others. And so I come up tonight to share my story, and how the big book and the people of CA have saved my life. So can you hear me back there? I'm hearing a no. Okay. Yes, no. All right, a little bit. All right. Let me move this up towards me then. How's that? Is that a little better? Beauteous. Okay. Thank you. So, if you haven't figured out by now, I'm a member of a number of fellowships, but Cocaine Anonymous delivered me. Cocaine Anonymous saved my life. The people in these rooms, and many of them were here before I got here, we just did a sobriety countdown, and I could see, people. I'm like, wow, two or three times as much time as I have. Maybe they should be up here. I don't know. But I'll try to, share my experience, strength, and hope tonight. I have spoke before, and my standard intro was, I don't like drug-a-logs, so I'm going to say, I tried drugs, I liked drugs, so I did drugs, and then drugs did me, so I tried to get clean. And that's usually how I start out, and that's good, okay, for a 10-minute, but I'm going to try to go a little deeper than that tonight, and I do want to share, because that's, again, me trying to work the program the way John thinks to work the program, and not really what the book tells us to do. The book tells us in how it works, Chapter 5, that our story is disclosed in a general way, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So that is what I want to share tonight. I guess I can rewind back to, being a kid, because I'll say in my story, I can give you 100, excuses to have used or to have gotten started, but not one solid good reason. Other than that, I'm born alcoholic. I'm born an addict. I have been, getting high all my life. I have always chased that, whether it was from getting in trouble or from putting substances in my body to change how I felt, to change how I interact with other people. I was getting drunk at age 5. Alcohol was okay in our house. It was a very European upbringing, and I do not blame my folks for anything. They're beautiful people. But I already by age 5 I was stealing wine and beer, and by 6 I was stealing the hard booze, but it wasn't just the alcohol. I've always had that cut. We used to have a hemp rope left over from the World War II and whatnot. We're trying to smoke that rope, like 7 years old, trying to smoke hemp rope. It didn't make sense. Snorting pixie sticks, the sugar, it would just, it doesn't make sense. It was addictive behavior way back when. funny thing is, I was sober, you know, and I'll say this time, because I've been in and out of these rooms, it took me, you know, 4 or 6 years in and out to get, you know, to my most recent sobriety date, which is October 4th, 2006. So, thank you. You know, all I've got's today. But interestingly, I was in, you know, probably 5 or 6 years sober, and I have gone to hundreds, if not thousands, of AA meetings as well. And I always introduced myself as an addict, never really felt alcoholism applied to me. And yet, I was scared to death to take a drink, because I know what happens when I drink. I know how that goes, okay, because that's got a long history there. You know, we're eating raw chicken and we're blowing up gas stations and things that other people don't do. So, you know, I'm 5 or 6 years in, and I'm having breakfast after that Razor's Edge meeting. Great meeting, great breakfast every Saturday afterwards. And a person who shall remain nameless, let's just call her Carmen. You know, I was sharing with, I'm like, you know, I'm really questioning. I'm starting to wonder if maybe this alcoholism thing does pertain to me. I've never felt that it did before. And actually, you know, I'm scared to death, though, to take a drink because I know what'll happen. It's zoom, you know, I'm right off again. You know, I've tried because I tried, you know, many times. Well, you know, I got to put the crack down. It was really obvious. You know, I got to stop doing that, but I'll just, you know, I'll do the heroin, I'll do the pills, I'll do the pot, I'll do the booze. Oh, the drugs and all the pot, powders are bad. We'll just do the psychedelics and the pot and the booze. That didn't work. Okay, well, we'll just do the booze. You know, and that didn't work either. So I know what happened. So I'm 5, 6 years into my recovery or something, and it suddenly, and God bless her, you know, that's not normal to be that scared to go do that. And looking back on it now, you know, and as I stand up here and reflect. Looking back, you know, I mean, yeah, I was stealing booze, you know, off my folks, you know, when I was in kindergarten. That's not normal, you know, and I couldn't see it. So, you know, the fact that I got sober on a certain day didn't make everything go poof. You know, it was not all clarity in one fell swoop. There was a lot of work that needed to be done. And I'm still working. I'm still growing. I'm still learning in this program. And I'm grateful for you people that have shown me the way. And led me, you know, and when I have been down, you know, people have helped me up, and people have carried me, you know, it is, I have a profound respect for everyone in this room, even if I haven't met you, I'm grateful, because me up here tonight, this is service work for me, this helps me stay sober tonight, so I hope I'm not taking any hostages here tonight with my story, but this helps me out, so I am grateful to be here. Service work has been a big part of my recovery. When I, you know, first got sober, I was doing, you know, I did more than 90 meetings in 90 days and loved every minute of it. I finally had that spiritual awakening, finally, you know, became ready and got involved with a lot of service work, you know, and that was beautiful. And, you know, work in the meetings, everything, the coffee, you know, taking out the cigarette cans, being a greeter, you know, taking a position, a secretary or GSR position. You do not have to have the most sobriety in the room to take these positions. You really should step up. You feel so good when you do, you know, and I'll get out of service work for a little while. I'm not holding a position at the moment. I could blame having young kids, and that probably is what tells me, you know, it's time for me to get back. But just when you're in the meetings, there's so many things you can do, and it's not just the meetings. You know, we live this program, you know, giving people rides, working with them, you know, and I still do a lot of that, you know, and it helps me, you know, to work with others. It helps me to give back. So, you know, we got to keep doing that. But, you know, rewinding back, you know, I was young. I was getting my hands on anything I could. It didn't matter. Smoking, just because it felt, you know, naughty, I think, you know. And, you know, whatever, stealing beer. And I got to be honest, I think the first time I drank beer, I was like, yuck. And I was told, this is an acquired taste, okay? And sitting here, you know, honest to God, I think Pepsi does taste better. Everything, all this acquired taste stuff, that's where the problem started. I think, what was I trying to be? Who was I trying to be? Who was I trying to hang with that made Pepsi taste better than, you know, what was probably Miller Lite at the time? My dad worked for Miller. We cases stacked up to get it free. Anyway, so looking back, I can see kind of some places where I've taken lefts and maybe others didn't. But, you know, got into a lot of different drugs, you know, got into some problems with those, learned that everything was around that. It was the focus. You know, the people I chose to hang out with, you know, were doing drugs and drinking. The parties I was going to, everybody was getting high, you know. That was the focus. That was what it was. And everything shifted. Old friends faded away. New friends came in. And it's because they did these things. They did what we like to do. They had good connections. They had good stuff. It was okay to do that with them. You could get, you know, falling down looped, and they thought that was normal. And go ahead, yeah, you can drive, man. You know, go ahead. You know, and you know, bad things started happening, but I didn't really see it then, and I certainly didn't blame, you know, myself. You know, I blamed a lot of other people, places, and things. So my story, you know, goes on for another 20-odd years or something of that. You know, things got worse, but I didn't see them. I tried a lot of, you know, control. We'll try this drug instead, you know, and then get into this crack stuff, you know, quit the cocaine for a couple years and just did everything else, and, you know, back in the 90s and whatever, and that was mild relief or something. I got back into the cocaine and fell really hard, you know, and it's not that I wasn't having problems with all the other stuff. I just fought there. I still believe there was some magic mix of if I do this with this or if I do this with these people that it'll be okay, you know. I can be a social crack user, you know. I'll just dabble in heroin. You know, I'll just use the heroin to come down from the cocaine. If you got an up or a down, or they cancel out. I took math class. That's how it works, right? This has got to be how it works, you know. And spent decades pursuing that, you know, trying to figure out what is the magic combination, you know. And I could not believe that, you know, something as simple as fellowship, as love, as God in my life could make me feel better than all of these things that I've been chasing for so long. I remember living in Indianapolis for a while. I did grow up here. I was down there for some schooling and had a business down there. And I remember making these, you know, runs, you know, to the dope man, you know, midnight, 2 a.m., 4 a.m., you know, and going past this park bench. The first contact I'd ever seen with Cocaine Anonymous. There was this park bench. It was painted green and had the CA logo, and it said something like, "We're here and we're free." And I was like, oh, free, you get what you pay for, you know. So, you know, I never thought about it, you know. And I couldn't believe that, you know, something, you know, sobriety could be fun, that I could get a higher high from having real relationships with people, you know. There's a story out there that you could Google or whatever and see it. It's a funny story. It's called Gimme Some Roy. Anybody heard of Gimme Some Roy? Heard the story before? Okay, good. All right. Well, Google it sometime. It's much better than I'm about to tell. I'll give you the short version. So this guy, Gimme Some Roy, you know, wants to find the highest high. And he's told if you climb Mount Fuji, there's a yogi on top who is going to tell you how to get the eternal high. And so he climbs up there and he finds this guy meditating, and he says, you know, I want the highest high. You know, I've done every drug and I want the highest high. And the guy says, the yogi says to him, says, well, you know, live a good spiritual life and take care of your people. He said, no, that can't be it. He's like, no, really, just be a good person. You know, do the next right thing. And give me some Roy's like, no, that can't be it, man. That can't be it. And the yogi's like, okay, fine. There's a bush over there. If you smoke two berries and one twig from that, you'll have the highest high anybody's ever had. It's like, I knew it, and runs off, right? So that's Gimme Some Roy. You know, and it just, the moral is that it's always easier to sell a sucker some shite than to, you know, get them to believe the truth. You know, and I couldn't believe that coming to these rooms could be good. It sounded like a punishment or something. I couldn't believe without the drugs and alcohol I could, you know, be good, that I could live a life and that would be fulfilling. You know, and yet I'm so willing to believe anything that, you know, these drugs are telling me. A guy named Squirrel told me that if we do this embalming fluid, we will get high. So I did the embalming fluid. And didn't really feel high, so what did I do? More! Exactly! Because Squirrel must know this must be the stuff I've been looking for decades, you know? But these CA jokers, it couldn't be, you know, that's free, you know? What they're giving away, it couldn't be what I'd want, you know? You know, it took me years to, you know, to get to that point, you know, where I could believe. And things, you know, things got bad for me, you know, the, I don't want to say softer drugs, but, you know, the natural progression going, and, you know, the more I got into the powders, the worse things came. I had a business, I smoked up, I got strung out pretty bad on Oxycontin, I was doing part of a tour, I was doing a lot of roadie work back then, and I was out with the band Poison and a couple others, and my hand got crushed, and so I was off the tour. My finger was splinted in this position, which was funny for like a day, old joke by, you know, three, and like 2 months later, I was like, get this splint off of here, you know. But anyway, I developed, you know, an addiction to Oxycontin. It's not the first time, let me be honest, let me be 100% clear here, that is not the first time I'd been running around with pain pills and already had quite a connection for this stuff, but now I had someone paying me to not work and writing me as many scripts as I wanted, so, you know, the problems got worse. But it's, you know, the thing is the crack was always there, and it is the crack that brought me to my knees. Today I'm grateful for that rotten stuff, because as much as I hate it, I do know that somewhere there's probably a whole trunk load of it sitting out somewhere, and if I don't mess with it, I won't have a problem. And that trunk load of that substance is probably not going to go out and rob a gas station. It's probably not going to go out and steal some jewelry. It's not going to go out and cause that problem. The stuff is rotten. I just need to stay away from it. The problem is me. The problem is me. It took me a long time to find that out. There was no magic combination of people, places, or things where I could do that stuff and not have that problem. And that is our first step. You know, and that took me a long time. A long time. My ego got in the way on that one. I always thought I could outthink it, I could outrun it, I could out-hustle it, you know, as long as I use the magic combination, people, places, and things, I will be okay. There's a magic formula here that for some reason doesn't come on the label, but, you know, there's got to be a way to do this right, you know, and I couldn't get it. So I did finally want to make some changes, you know, and I tried a lot of the classic changes, changing girlfriends, changing places I'd get high, tried geographic changes, that was me moving back to the Milwaukee area, you know, had a stayed sober for a month or something, and then went out, you know, 3 a.m. to find some clucker on the corner, you know, his eyes are like this, you know, and it's just, you know, it takes no time to plug right back in. I'm sorry to say that it turns out there is cocaine in Milwaukee, too. So I was off and running again, you know. But I tried some things. Tried some counseling and didn't take it very serious and whatnot, and it didn't do a lot for me. I did a couple treatments, you know, and it planted some seeds. For me, it was a process, I guess, in warming up and getting ready. And I give those people a lot of credit because I am hard-headed and I'm full of self, and they had their work cut out for them. But they told me about Cocaine Anonymous, and I said, you know, I saw a park bench back in the day that and people had put their logo on, and that got me in the doors. It got me in the doors. And so for the next 4 years, I was in and out of these doors. And, you know, I was just stuck on that first step because I knew I had a problem. I could admit there was unmanageability, but I could not accept that it would always be that way for me. I'm long past some invisible line. It's never, even if the first night, you know, I don't have horrible things happen, that's probably really the worst thing, because then I think I've got control and I'm going to keep, you know, banging my head against the wall for a long time, you know, and it'll get terrible bad again really quick. I had to accept that, but it took me 4 years of coming in and out of these rooms, and I would sometimes get a month or two, I think maybe once three, you know, and I really felt good, but I wasn't working the program I needed to work. I wasn't really working the steps I needed to work, when I decided to work the steps, I'd be like, oh yeah, I'll do like 4, 5, 6, and 7 in my head on the way home from the meeting. You know, I wasn't asking a sponsor to help me with them. And I always wanted to go right to step 9. And I didn't really know anything other than I'd heard the steps, right? I'm thinking step 9, that's the one where I go apologize to people and then they leave the checkbook out again and they trust me with the car keys. I want to do 9. Let's do step 9. Let's go right to step 9. So I was, you know, I wasn't even a two-stepper. I was pretty much a one-stepper. I was always right to step 9 because I thought that, you know, apologizing was going to fix things, you know, and that just because I sincerely meant it this time that it would be different. And, you know, and in fairness to myself and a lot of other people, when I was on my knees time after time, you know, and that paycheck is gone again from that job, I finally just got another one, you know, and now the paycheck's gone like that. And that next, you know, that next morning, I'm, you know, been in the same clothes for 4 days and haven't called, you know, the girl in three days or something. And I have no idea what story to give. You know, I didn't know about honesty back then. But in my heart of hearts, I absolutely meant everything I said. I will never pick that stuff up again. I will never do that again. And I believed it. You know, and that's kind of the scary thing is when you really, really try to get sober and realize just how little control you have over what's going on and just how unmanageable life is. That's truly scary. You know, because I remember feeling those things and believing in my heart of hearts, you know. And I'll tell you, I remember one morning sharing with my family, I said, I will break my fingers before I pick up another crack pipe. I will break my own fingers before I pick up another crack pipe. Well, fast forward maybe 9 or 12 months, and I've burned the wrong people for some money for crack. And, you know, they took my car to pay the debt. And they jumped up and down on me pretty good. And then to make sure that everyone knew not to mess with their money, they broke both my arms. So I'm in the basement and, you know, what should I do? Maybe I should go to the hospital. You know, my nose is back here. I've got 2 broken arms. What should I do? Well, I'll turn it over to my higher power, which was the crack pipe. So I'm sitting there with 2 broken arms trying to load a crack pipe. I couldn't. I'm just trying to figure out how to get it, like, to my face because cocaine was the cause and solution to all of my problems. You know, and I did end up later at the hospital. But, you know, I had to finally concede that one, that I needed some help, you know. It was ironical how much I had believed that I, you know, had some willpower and that I would never do that again. And look, you know, not long later, you know, exactly where I was at, you know. And so I did finally turn, you know, over that day to my higher power. And that's not my sobriety date, you know, because that is not a spiritual experience. That is a traumatic experience. That was... You know, that was not, I had to hit my head a couple of more times pretty good before the willingness, the humility crept in, you know. Those golden keys would turn for me, you know. That last relapse was, you know, was pretty brutal. You know, I got shot, I got stabbed, I got run over, I got, you know, so many baseball bats and golf clubs broken over my head. It was a ridiculous year, and I have no idea how I'm alive. No, I do know how I'm alive. It is God, and I want to give him the credit for that. Amen. That is exactly why I'm alive today. You know, 3 people got shot within 4 months at my place that summer. You know, I probably should be locked up for a long time, too. You know, and I was delivered. And I hope that whatever he has for me, whatever it is that he wants me to do, that I do, and I have no idea what that is, and I have no delusions that it's something magnificent. Could very well be that I pull my car out of Pick and Save in time to slow down some other car that would have otherwise hit the kid who's going to grow up to cure cancer. You know, I have no idea what the good Lord has for me, but when I listen to my gut and do what I think is the right thing to do, it always seems to work out. It's not the easiest thing, you know, but I believe that voice in my gut, that sense of right and wrong, that's the Lord's voice to me, you know. And when I work these steps and I seek communion with him, I experience that, and it's worked for me in so many ways. You know, I grew up very Catholic, and I didn't learn how to pray until I started coming to CA, because I had memorized, and I'm back to, you know, still a Catholic for the record. I'm not dogging Catholicism here, please understand that. But growing up, I learned a bunch of prayers and I memorized them. And one day I was coming out of a meeting back at the old Lawrence Center on a Wednesday night, and I really wanted to go use. But I knew I didn't really want to go use, but I really wanted to go use. So I pull up in front of this crack house, and I'm sitting there parked in my car, and I'm like, you know, don't do it, don't. Okay, they told you to pray. Say the Serenity Prayer. So I sat there in my car saying the Serenity Prayer over and over and over, and I still really wanted to go inside. And I got mad that it wasn't being lifted from me. And I look up and I said, God, what do I got to do? And just that fast, the answer hit me like a lightning bolt in my head. Go home, a-hole. And I said, I think I just heard a-hole. But go home, you know, it sounds so simple, but that was probably the first time I ever communicated with my higher power. You know, that God as I understand him, that was the first time I actually reached out and tried to have a conversation. And when it was a two-way conversation, that really knocked my socks off. I went home. You know, I've had a lot of spiritual experiences through this program that I did not always understand back in the day. I remember, you know, I was out using, got really lit up in Ohio and landed in Maryland, and my shoes were still in Ohio. And this guy needed some help driving a car, and it was just two of us. So I'm like, yeah, all right, I'll drive your car, drive his car. And I don't really got any money or whatever to give you. You know, he's like, but, you know, I sell shoes by any chance. You need a pair of shoes. Yeah, I do, you know, because I'd lost them back in Ohio. And then I thought, wow, what a great coincidence, you know. And now I'm like, that's the good Lord doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, you know. I remember working in Racine and living in Milwaukee, coming home after work one day and thinking about going to this meeting out in Waukesha. I was really fond of an AA meeting called As Bill Sees It. They used the As Bill Sees It book. Good meeting. And thinking about going to that meeting, and I'm like, should I go? You know, I don't know. You know, I'm going to almost get home, then I have to take a left and go another 30 minutes. Do I really want to do that, you know? And just then my phone rings, and it's this newcomer I've given my phone number to a couple of 3 weeks before. He says, hey, I don't know if you remember me, but you gave me your phone number. And I was just thinking about going to this meeting called As Bill Sees It. You know, by any chance, do you want to go to that meeting with me? Oh, yeah. I hear that call. I listen to that call, you know, and I believe that. You know, and that to me is the Lord of my life these days. He delivered me, and if I stay on point with where I think I'm supposed to be, things work out really well. You know, I was out, I had another, you know, programmatic God moment out in Washington, D.C. about a month ago. It was just before Fat Tuesday, so flying out there. And I moved recently, so a lot of my stuff is still in boxes, and I'm packing for this trip, and I'm like, all right, I got to bring a book to read on the plane because I'm, you know, I can't do nothing for 2 hours and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all right, where are my books? They're all packed except for one, which is Good Book of AA. Remember the book AA? This is a story about the book of AA. So I bring my book on the plane, and I read the foreword, the doctor's opinion, chapter one, Bill's story, and that's about as much time as I have on the plane, so I just read it's Bill's story. The next day, you know, I'm there, and it's Fat Tuesday, so Mardi Gras, you know, and I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll go out to a club down here and just see what the nightlife's like, check out the beads, you know, not drink or anything, but, you know, just go out and have a little fun. And so I get out my phone and I Google up, you know, it's Bethesda, Maryland, Bethesda nightclubs, you know, and a couple come up. And this number three's got a good-looking symbol, so I hit that one and pull it up. The Del Rey Club, I'm like, that looks good. So Del Rey Club, turns out it's a 12-step club. I'm like, all right, God, I get it, so... So I look, and that night I end up, instead I go home and I FaceTime the kids, and I don't end up going back out that night. There's nothing for me out on the streets at that time of night. But they do have a meeting there at 6:45 the next morning. And I'm like, well, I wonder if it's going to be like, you know, just like two old guys drinking coffee, been the same two guys for 20 years, you know, what kind of meeting is this? And I said, you know what, see what happens. And sure enough, you know, my alarm actually woke me up, got up, and said, I'm going to hoof it. You know, I'm going to hoof down to this place. And I get down, I'm a little bit late, get to the address, and it's like a house. And I'm like, and there's like a big church on the property. I'm like, this looks like the preacher's house. I'm like, all right, God, you know, you brought me here. So I walk up, and there's a little note on the door, Del Rey Club, around the back. So I'm like, all right, I go walk around back. And there's this little blue sign, like size of a business card, in the grass with a arrow pointing Del Rey Club that way. So I follow that out to some parking lot. I'm looking around. There's nothing but like the back of what appears to be a school. And one door. I'm like, there's nothing else around here that could possibly be this Del Rey Club, but this looks like a school. Do I want to be the weird guy that's like found wandering in elementary school? You know, this don't sound right, man. This is, you know, I might not make it back home. But I said, you know, God, you know, you brought me here. I'm going in this door, and I hear some voices, and I follow, you know, I go up the stairs, I'm hearing voices, and I go, and sure enough, there's this beautiful, 6:45 in the morning, there's a meeting with like 50 people, 60 people, in a beautiful meeting. And it turns out it's a big book study, and what are they studying? Chapter 1, Bill's story, that I just read. So, okay, I get it, God, I get it, thank you. I've had a lot of these moments in here, and I don't think those are coincidence anymore. I don't think there's some cosmic accidents or, you know, 16,000 cosmic accidents in a row that kept me alive and delivered me to where I'm at. I believe it's my higher power. You know, and when I say higher power, I believe in God very formally, but I want to say for the record, there are a lot of higher powers. When my arms were broken, that doctor was a higher power. I had to give the power from my crack pipe, put that thing down, and go see that doctor. That was a higher power, you know. This microphone, you people in back can hear me right now. Apparently it's a higher power than the lung power I got. There's so many higher powers we turn it over to all the time. Don't be afraid of that. Don't be afraid of that. That is how we do. I'm grateful for all that I've learned. You know, I like I said, step one, I was in and out for 4 years or something like that of these rooms and learned a lot of great stuff, just didn't work as solid. I ended up with a coffee cup full of newcomer chips, literally, you know, which I donated back. Ended up living across the street from the Alano Club in Waukesha. One of their meetings ran out of newcomer chips one time. Like, ooh, 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 ran home and was able to give all those back, you know. So finally, after 4 years, I had the humility, had the willingness to turn things over, and I got my third sponsor, and thank you. thank you for taking me through the steps and teaching me this book and this program the way it was meant to be. You need a sponsor with a sponsor with a sponsor. You know, there is a way to do this. Chapter 5 tells us how it works. And I'm so grateful. You know, step 2 was actually not hard for me. I always believed God could do it. I just, my ego in step 1, I just wouldn't let him. Step 3, I had to do that. You know, and that's kind of how I came to live in front of the Alano Club. Actually, there was rooms for rent upstairs, and they were sober. You had to be sober. I was like, ooh, I'll apply for that. Well, a lot of people applied and said, all right, you know, instead of getting catty, God, if it's meant to be, you know, let me get it. And I didn't get it, and it was okay. You know, I said, it's okay. I didn't feel that. Yeah, well, they'll probably just relapse. I gave it to the wrong people. I didn't feel any of that, man. I turned it over and let God work. And I ended up getting an apartment right across the street for like the same money that was kind of like bigger and newly remodeled and whatever. And, you know, I couldn't see that coming, you know, and it worked out very well for me. I lived there for a couple of 4 years in early sobriety, something like that, you know, this time. That was amazing. Fourth step, got to do it, man, dude. You know, those four inventories, the people we've harmed, the resentments, the fears and the sex conduct, you know, there's a way to do that. Fourth step and do it. I spent 10 months doing it. Don't do that. Don't do that. Talk to your sponsor. I think I took a little too long on. It was very, very thorough, though, and it really helped. Did the fifth step. Didn't want to do it because I liked my sponsor. Didn't want to tell him all that stuff, you know. So my plan was to go up to Green Bay and find a priest and just like vomit everything on him. Like, take this guy hostage, you know, with all the terrible things I've ever done, and then run away. Because I didn't know how this program works. I'm still not sure I do, but I do know that it does work. So doing that fifth step was amazing. The way it took things off of me, it like kind of put them in the past. I don't know how else to say that, but it's like stepping outside myself and saying, OMG, I was insane. I mean, there's no way that those things I was doing made sense at all. You know, no. And to kind of turn a corner there, you know, and then get on to, you know, look at those character defects, become willing to change those and ask God to take those from me. And I still got to do them sixth and seventh all the time. They come back. I'm sorry. I'm still somewhat ego-driven and full of will, and I have to take that stuff, you know, away from myself. And I have to do that work. I continue to have to do that work. You know, recovery, it wasn't a magic click the day I got sober. There's a lot of work. And I still find a ton of work I need to do. I still need to keep on improving that conscious contact with God. You know, making amends for, you know, things I've done. Rebecca, I owe you a cupcake. I am sorry I ate your whole cupcake last night. I thought I was funny. She offered me a bite. I took the whole thing, shoved it in my mouth, almost choked laughing. I owe you a cupcake. And that is a mess. Not just an apology. I'm going to get the cupcake. That is an amends. you know, in 12, paying it forward, you know, and living that spiritual experience, carrying that forward in all of my life's affairs. I have to do that, you know. If I didn't have these principles and if I didn't have these steps to work, I'm sure I would have, you know, crazied myself out of a job a long time ago. Things continue to come up. They always will. It's how we deal with them. And this is a program of living. This is a program of action. You know, we have to do these things. A spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. But it does work, you know. And the things I've seen in recovery, you know, the miracles I've seen, and that I know you all have too, you know, they blow my mind. If you stop and just breathe for a second and look at, you know, where many of us should be, whether, you know, or, you know, whether it's the morgue or the prison, you know, the fact that we're not, you know, in those places, you know, and a lot of us have had some time in those places. I know I've done more than enough of my share of that. Tell you how sick I was. I spent an Easter in Marion County Jail once in Indianapolis. So because I was there and it was Easter, I thought, what did I think to do to celebrate Easter? I traded up my food to get some crack cocaine inside the county jail. Because it's Easter, so I'm going to smoke crack. That made sense at the time. I can look back now and say, that's not right. I don't think that's what God had in mind. I think that juice box is probably what he had in mind, because that's what he sent me, you know. But I traded my stuff up. You know, looking back, that's insanity, and I'm grateful to be delivered from that now. You know, the people that have helped me along the way, I'm so grateful for. You know, those that came before me, and I want to keep paying that back. You know, life is good when we work these steps. You know, I really don't think that I'm all that or anything, but I'm happy today. I'm sober. I'm stable. God bless her. I've got a wife and now a couple of kids that I've tricked into a relationship. I'm kidding. So, you know, that's the program working for me. Everything I've got today, I attribute to this program. You know, I mean, when I came back in this last time, you know, I had nothing on a couple of clothes on my back. I remember I was very fastidious about going to the Razor's Edge meeting every Saturday, but I only owned two sweatshirts, so I was always real careful to like wear this one this week, and the next week I'll wear the other one, you know, because I don't, you know, and that humility is what I needed, and I need to hang on to that, you know. I wore a sport coat tonight, and it's out of respect for the people and the program, and I know some meetings who it's kind of common to wear a tie when you speak, and I'm not going there, but I have a ton of respect for y'all. And that said, I picked this tie, I picked this sport coat because of a friend named Cal. And Cal was homeless, and very alcoholic. But Cal thought that as long as he looked good on the outside, everything was okay. And so Cal, homeless, always had a sport coat on. So this sport coat reminds me of Cal, and I wear it every now and again. I got it at Goodwill for a couple of bucks, and you know, it can make you feel good, but it reminds me that Cal was not okay. Cal needed to reach out and have some help. So, you know, I'm gonna drop the rock here today. You know, total clarity, and with all respect. But when we need help, we need to reach out. And I know people, including myself, you know, you don't stop struggling because you get, you know, 30 days, because you get, you know, 3 years. Things happen, and we have to keep doing that. You know, we have to keep reaching out to one another, and we're all worth it, you know. And I'll do that for you, you know, if you'll do that for me, and I know you all will. And I want you to know I will too, because this is how it works, man. This is life or death. Don't let anyone tell you any different. You know, I've seen a lot of y'all at funerals this year. I mean, we're only, what is this, April? You know, I've already seen a lot of you at April, you know, at funerals already this year, and we all know the names, and, you know, rest in peace. You know, we'll miss them. But, you know, we'll keep the lights on. We'll keep the lights on. I'm grateful for those that brought it for me. You know, I've got a little girl who loves to hang upside down, let the blood rush to her head and go, woo, woo, woo. And I wanna make sure that these chairs are still here. So y'all keep coming back, I will too. My name is John, I'm an addict. Thank you for letting me share.